We can no longer afford to allow the radical homosexual to stop us. Otherwise, we're going to lose our country.
It's really a great opportunity to showcase not just Sydney as a wonderful international city, but the region more broadly. We've got a fabulously rich and diverse LGBTI community, and it's about time that World Pride can come to Australia.
And it's not your first time in Europe either.
So many people were fascinated with my dark skin, my features and stuff like that. Nobody heard of Aboriginal people.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Australian government proposes protections for religious bigotry, Oaxaca lawmakers approve marriage equality, and Sydney hot to host World Pride 2023. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Travis Avery.
With NewsRound, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 31st, 2019. A draft religious discrimination bill was presented by Australian Attorney General Christian Porter late this week. The proposal would make discrimination based on a person's religious belief illegal in certain situations. For example, healthcare providers would be able to deny abortion services if doing so would violate their religious belief. Charitable nonprofits like hospitals and nursing homes that engage in primarily commercial activities would not be considered religious bodies under the measure. Businesses with annual revenue over $50 million would not be allowed to penalize their employees for expressing their religious beliefs outside of work. That is, unless the business can prove that it would cause unjustifiable financial hardship. That specific issue has been receiving much public attention because of star rugby player and devout Christian Israel Folau. Folau is suing Rugby Australia and his former team after being fired for a series of obnoxiously homophobic comments posted on social media. In them, he urged LGBTIQ people and other alleged sinners to repent or hell awaits them. Folau's church has been described by outsiders as a small, queer and Catholic-hating cult-like congregation, and it's led by his father.
Other provisions of the government's proposed religious discrimination bill would allow religious schools to refuse to host marriage ceremonies for same-gender couples. The draft bill does not resolve whether or not religious schools would be free to expel students or hire or fire staff because of their sexuality. Attorney General Porter urged empathy and understanding among his fellow Australians when it comes to religious belief. He added that it should not be underestimated how important religion is to the composition and success of the life of the Australian nation itself. Meanwhile, a federal court in Melbourne has given Folau and Rugby Australia until mid-December to settle. Folau's lawsuit demands $10 million in damages and reinstatement. Chief Judge Will Alstergren said that if mediation fails, a 3 to 5 day trial would begin on February 4th, 2020.
Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison is himself a Pentecostal Christian. His Conservative Liberal Party administration announced that public submissions on the religious discrimination bill would be accepted until October 2nd. Queer faith groups are complaining about the relatively short time period. They also charge that major religious leaders were consulted as the bill was being drafted, while queer faith groups were not. Nor was input solicited from any LGBTIQ advocacy group. Spokespeople from the non-denominational Christian network Equal Voices and the Uniting Church LGBTIQ Network spoke this week with the Sydney Star Observer. Uniting Network co-convener the Reverend Peter Weeks said that the bill is not only morally wrong, but not theologically sustainable. Equal Voices spokeswoman, the Reverend Dr. Josephine Inkpin, charged that the proposed legislation is a backlash against the advent of marriage equality, which was overwhelmingly supported by the Australian population in a December 2017 referendum. Indeed, a new Galaxy YouGov poll suggests that at least 63% of Australians oppose allowing religious organizations to discriminate against LGBTIQ people. 48% of those queer supportive respondents describe themselves as strongly religious.
The Australian state of Victoria will allow trans people to change the gender designation on their birth certificates without medical intervention. The bill cleared its last hurdle in the upper house of the state parliament on August 27th. A trans person was previously required to have first undergone gender reassignment surgery and to submit confirming declarations from two medical practitioners. The new reforms only require transgender adults to submit a statement supporting their application for a change of gender from someone who has known them for at least 12 months, someone who can attest to the applicant's filing in good faith. Parents of minors at least 16 years of age need to provide a statutory declaration along with a supporting document from a doctor or psychologist confirming that change in gender designation is in the child's best interest. A magistrate will resolve any disputes between the parents about what to do based on the best interests of the child. Victoria now joins Tasmania, South Australia, the Australian Capital Territory, and the Northern Territory in relaxing its transgender laws. Western Australia allows trans people to change the gender on their birth certificates only if they're undergoing hormone therapy. Queensland and New South Wales continue to require trans people to undergo reassignment surgery before altering their documents.
Lawmakers in the Mexican state of Oaxaca opened civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples this week. It's the 19th of the country's 31 states to do so. Same-gender marriage first became legal in the capital district of Mexico City. The Associated Press quotes a statement from the state Congress that marriage in Oaxaca is now defined as a civil contract celebrated between two persons who unite to realize a life in common and provide each other respect, equality, and mutual help. Mexico's Supreme Court of Justice of the nation declared in 2015 that state bans on marriage equality are unconstitutional, but it has no power to order nationwide equality. If state lawmakers do not act to specifically open marriage, queer couples must go through an expensive and time-consuming legal process called an amparo to get a judge to declare their right to marry. Based on the decision by the Supreme Court of Justice of the nation, the judge cannot refuse to issue the amparo.
At least 130 athletes gathered in Istanbul on August 24th and 25th to participate in the third annual Queer Olympics. That's Olympics with an X. However, government officials stepped in to X the event out. Organizer Alif Kaya told Agence France-Presse that when he and other volunteers arrived to start setting up, they saw police and two water cannons nearby. Only then, he said, we were told that we did not have permission to hold the event. Kaya said authorities waited until the last minute to tell us about the ban to avoid us appealing. The sports weekend was set to include beach volleyball, football, and the long jump. This is just the latest setback in the deteriorating situation for queer organizing in Turkey. The Queer Olympics began in Istanbul in 2017, and the first two went off without a hitch. This year, organizers said on Instagram that the friendly competition was banned by the Kaidike district governor as a precaution against the provocations that may occur due to social sensitivities. The message said they were told that the action was taken to protect public health, public order, and public morality. Turkey was once thought to be one of the more queer-tolerant nations in the Islamic world. However, LGBTQ pride events have increasingly either been banned or violently disrupted under what some critics decry as the creeping fascism of the regime of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Istanbul Pride once drew tens of thousands of visitors to the city until it was canceled indefinitely in 2014.
Finally, counter-protesters in Modesto, California, far outnumbered members of the California Straight Pride Coalition at their Straight Pride rally on August 24th. The rally was going to be held in a private barn after officials denied organizers a permit to gather in a public park in the Central Valley city just south of Sacramento. The Modesto Bee reported that the Durer barn owners discovered what the event was about and kicked them out. It then moved to outside a Planned Parenthood office. By the time they arrived there, the Bee counted about 20 rally participants and at least 10 times that number of counter-protesters. Modesto City Councilmember Manny Graywall spoke to the diverse crowd.
This is the Modesto I know. This is the Modesto that's accepted, regardless if you wear an article of faith on your head, or if you're from the Sikh community, Indian community, if you're from the Caucasian, African American, the LGBT community. We are an accepting community, and we welcome everyone.
Straight Pride Rally participant Jesse Peterson had a different point of view.
You need to come back to the order of God, and that order is God and Christ, Christ and man over woman, and woman over children, and everything else is abnormal. And so we can no longer afford to allow the children of the lie, the radical homosexuals, the liberal media, the Democratic Party, the right-o Republicans, the never-Trumpers to stop us. Otherwise, we're going to lose our country.
But counter-protest organizer Chris Holland told The Bee that
I couldn't be more happy with how it's going down, seeing all of our community come together like this, building bridges across all of our marginalized communities and making friendships. It's been just inspiring.
As the Straight Pride Rally disbanded, a video posted on Twitter shows the counter-protesters chanting, "Don't come back."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending August 31st, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Travis Avery.
This just in from Boston, Massachusetts. A few hundred straight pride paraders were met by at least 1,000 counter-protesters on September 1st. A heavy police presence kept the opposing sides separate, and the dueling events remained mostly peaceful. Still, about 36 were arrested, mostly from among Antifa supporters on the counter-protest side. 4 officers sustained minor injuries.
Hey, everybody, this is Leah Delaria, and you are listening to This Way Out.
We like to party. We like to party. We like to party. We like to party. We like to party.
2017 in Madrid, 2019 in New York, 2021 in Copenhagen. Where in the world will World Pride go in 2023? This Way Out, Sydney correspondent Barry McKay spoke with Kate Wickett and Nana Miskouri about their efforts to bring the biennial event to their hometown.
World Pride is a great event. It's an event licensed by InterPride, and it occurs every 2 years. This year it was obviously in New York. In 2021 it's in Copenhagen, and of course Sydney's bidding to host for 2023.
For our international audience who may not have experienced it, can you tell me a little bit about the annual Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras?
Sure. Well, the Mardi Gras has been in existence since 1978, when we first took to the streets to assert our rights. And over those last 41 years, the festival really has grown into very much a festival, not just a parade or a march up Oxford Street. There's a whole 2-week festival that surrounds that one big special night. And so we have arts performance, we have theatre, painting, we have a fair day. And then, of course, it culminates into the march up Oxford Street, finishing with a really very fun and large dance party. So it differs from other marches or parades in the world because it's at nighttime and it's fully curated. We have a capacity of about 12,500 marches, and those floats that you see are fully curated and have worked long and hard to be involved in the march.
And of course it's in the Australian summertime, so it's nice and warm in the evenings.
Absolutely, and march in Sydney is just wonderful. It's not too humid and it's nice long nights. And of course it's a great escape for all those overseas who want to have some respite from the cold winter.
How many people usually attend World Pride in comparison to Sydney's Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras?
Well, that's a really interesting question because, as I said earlier, we have about 12,500 people who march at Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, and they're watched by about 300,000 to 500,000 people we've peaked at. Now, in New York for this year's World Pride, the estimates are really between 4.5 and 5 million people who attended the march. So, look, if what we're looking at for 2023 is somewhere in the projections of 1.2 to 1.3 million, which is just outstanding.
Three cities are in the bid for World Pride 2023. What, in your opinion, makes Sydney the stronger candidate over the other candidates, Houston and Montreal?
As I said earlier, InterPride is the international organisation of Pride organisations, and its values and its remit really is to be a global organisation. And interestingly, World Pride has never, ever been held in the Southern Hemisphere. So the first proposition or value proposition to InterPride members is that if you want to be a truly global organisation, you need to be a truly global organisation. And so we say it's about time that we shine a light on the Asia Pacific and the region more broadly, so that people in the Northern Hemisphere can see that we're down here and we have our own very established parties, but also we have our own unique challenges too. Particularly, you know, the Brunei incident that happened earlier in the year and the different cultures that we have down here in the Asia Pacific.
Why did Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras decide to put up its hand this time?
It's really a great opportunity just to showcase not just Sydney as a wonderful international city, but the region more broadly. We've got the longest continuous living First Nations culture in the world. We've got a fabulously rich and diverse LGBTI community. And certainly, as I said, the Asia Pacific region has been very much underrepresented at InterPride. So we believe that it's about time that World Pride can come to Australia.
What is involved in putting together a bid?
Well, we have submitted our draft and final now written bid for World Pride. We did that in July. The next steps from here is we've got a really intense 9 weeks until mid-October when we go to the InterPride AGM in Athens in Greece. And at that AGM, we will pitch along with Montreal and Houston. We get 30 minutes to effectively pitch our bid in front of the membership, to which they then vote the next day. So we've got a lot of lobbying and organising to do over the next 9 weeks and to really bring to life what it is that our value proposition is.
I remember when Sydney held the Gay Games, I was involved with putting together a video for bid for the Gay Games. Have you done similar stuff like that?
Yes, we have. We've got a couple of social videos that are out, and I would say to everyone, please watch, because there'll be some more coming to light shortly.
Are they on YouTube?
They are on YouTube. They're also on the Mardi Gras website and our Facebook page. But what we have done is created a wonderful video that we have already shown around the world when we went over to both London and New York Pride in June and July. And we look to be doing something very similar for the pitch in Athens.
What would be the various activities happening should Sydney win the bid in 2023? And what would a World Pride in Sydney look like?
Sure. Well, for World Pride, there are four core or key criteria in terms of events that we must hold. So there's an opening ceremony, a closing ceremony, a march, and a human rights conference. And so we really do think that it's a great opportunity to showcase all parts of Sydney City and, you know, be prepared to have a number of events across the city, not just in the Darlinghurst and Oxford Street area. But the World Pride event differs significantly in terms of its scale, I suppose, where you have a number of the InterPride members who will fly specifically for the AGM and for the party and the human rights conference. But I suppose it's a bigger and different Mardi Gras. Bigger doesn't always mean better, but we certainly think there's going to be some different events that aren't currently a part of our programming.
So human rights conference, that's something that Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras normally doesn't hold. What would that entail?
It's a good question. We currently have in our program the Queer Thinking, which we do talk about as very much a kind of gathering of minds and thought leadership. I suppose the conference would be more in a conference format where we have keynotes and breakout sessions and really discuss, I guess, some of the minutiae of matters that LGBT people face today, whether it be legal or law reform or health issues. So very much more of a conference-based as opposed to queer thinking, but similar topics to what queer thinking currently looks into.
So would you be looking at issues such as marriage equality in the Asia-Pacific region?
That is certainly an issue that has been at the forefront of a number of discussions across the world, and certainly having attended the Human Rights Conference in New York recently was definitely on the agenda. I suppose what differs with respect to the Asia-Pacific region is that in some respects marriage equality is, I suppose, confirming of the rights that we have. And in other areas in our region, sometimes those issues are around simple things such as personal safety. So I do think that there's some unique issues in the region that North America and the Northern Hemisphere don't necessarily grapple with.
I understand you've got an ambassador for Sydney's BID, an Australian Indigenous drag queen called Nana Muscuri. What will her role be? And I understand she's travelling to Europe soon.
Yeah, that's correct. So Nana Muscuri's been part of the scene here, obviously, in Sydney for some time and is a highly respected elder of the Gadigal people. Nana's role while overseas will be both in terms of advocacy, not just for Sydney and Mardi Gras and our BID, but to really, I suppose, again, shine a light on our First Nations history, something that really came across quite clearly to me as we recently travelled through North America and Europe, is that there still isn't a lot of knowledge around Australia's First Nations peoples. And so it's very much an opportunity for the rest of the world to see how much we, Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, value our First Nations in everything that we do.
When will the winner be announced?
So when we go to Athens in October, we have that 30-minute pitch, as I said, on the Saturday, and then the vote is on Sunday. Mm. Now, we should find out Sunday afternoon whether we've been successful. So there'll either be some sore heads the next day through celebration or commiserations, but it's a quick turnaround. So once we've pitched, we find out pretty much within 24 hours.
Beautiful. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Look, I think Mardi Gras has been overwhelmed by support and goodwill with respect to our BID. I guess Montreal are certainly the front runner in terms of favourites to win the BID, but that certainly doesn't stop us from really giving it a good go. We think we've got a really strong value proposition about why World Pride should be in Sydney in 2023. And win or lose, this has just been an outstanding and an incredible experience for Mardi Gras' reach across the world. And we're really proud of the connections and relationships that we've made with other prides around the world, learning and sharing experiences with all of them along the way.
I had a quick chat with Mardi Gras Ambassador to the 2023 World Pride BID, Aboriginal drag queen Nana Muscuri, in between performances before she left for Europe last week.
Gotta bring it a little bit louder, my brothers and sisters. Are we having a party? Dead leg. Rock solid.
Hi Barry, my name's Graham Sims. I'm also known as Nana Muscuri, an Aboriginal drag queen from Sydney, Redfern, also known as Gadigal Land of the Eora Nation.
And you're off to Europe this week. Tell me about that.
Yes, I'm excited. Two more days I'll actually be flying out from Sydney and flying to Dublin on our way to Newry in Ireland.
So you'll be attending Pride marches in Ireland and Greece?
Yes, I believe there is certainly a Pride March in Newry in Ireland, where my role would be, Barry, is to, as a First Nations person, through my commitment, my involvement with Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, and also the Rainbow community, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community here in Sydney over the past 20 a bit years, is that I've been approached by Mardi Gras to attend, to be an advocate for Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras and also for First Nations people, given that I am a Gadigal person. Mardi Gras Parade, Mardi Gras operates on Gadigal land, and I'm actually honoured to be included, to be able to represent my mob, my brothers and sisters, my titters, my brother boys and sister girls, rainbow family, to be there to represent us all.
And you'll be going to the actual World Pride BID vote meeting in October as well.
Yeah, that's correct. The voting takes place, I believe, on the 17th of October in Athens. I've been approached to attend there. And the beauty of it too, I'm also co-chair of First Nations Rainbow, which is an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander social support group for the LGBTQI Rainbow community here in Sydney. And we actually have a partnership with Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. We're in our second year with partnership with that. But for the likes of First Nations Rainbow, I'm actually the co-chair of that, along with Russell Weston. The beauty of that is that in my presence while I'm over in Athens, we are also a member of Interpride. So therefore, with my presence being there, I'll be able to place my vote in Athens on behalf of First Nations Rainbow.
And you'll be doing some performing as well?
Yes, I've got a couple of spot numbers to do, I believe, on the Friday and Saturday night in Newry in Ireland, and I believe there's something for us in line in Athens also.
And it's not your first time in Europe either. You've been there before, haven't you?
Yeah, it was about with my ex-partner, actually. We were there coming up to this time 6 years ago. And when I went there, you know, so many people were fascinated with my dark skin, my features and stuff like that. Nobody heard of Aboriginal people. So I'm not sure what the reception's going to be like when I get to Ireland.
So people asked you where you're from?
Well, I told them, you know, our culture goes back well over 60,000 years. We're the oldest living culture in the world. You know, people travelled all over to get to the Greek islands and stuff like that when I visited 6 years ago, also in Athens, but they never ever heard of First Nations people, as in Aboriginal people here in Australia. So, you know, I'd done a little bit of education while I was on holidays too, and which is lovely.
I want to wish you all the best for your time overseas and good luck for the 2023 World Pride bid.
Yes, this is for, you know, the 2023 bid to come down here in the Southern Hemisphere, to be here with us on Gadigal country, my people's country. Beautiful.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia for This Way Out.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Christopher Gall and Travis Avery, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Barry McKay. The Venga Boys and Kylie Minogue performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, John Beaupre, Richard Merck, and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on CJLY Slocum Valley, New Denver, Nelson and Crawford Bay, British Columbia, KGAY Thousand Palms, Coachella Valley, California, WJFF Jeffersonville, New York, and a rich array of community radio stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Now y'all stay tuned.